Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at bioenergy today. The Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center at UW-Madison is one of four across the U.S., and they are celebrating a big milestone this summer, their 500th patent application. So we'll talk about how research and discoveries in the bioenergy field become patents, and the economic benefit that they can often have for our state. So what questions do you have about the link between industry, agriculture, and the university research? Do you work in the biotech field? Love to hear from you. And what developments have you seen? What challenges still remain? What excites you? Join in. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Two guests for you today. Back once again, Tim Donahue, director of the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, and he's also interim director of the Wisconsin Energy Institute. Tim, good to see you again.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Thanks a lot. Josh Carson joins us as well. He is a licensing associate with the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation. Josh, welcome to you as well.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Well, let's start with you, Tim. There are four bioenergy research centers in the U.S., including the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, right at UW-Madison. So talk about the mission and the role of these research centers.
Sure, Larry. First, I just want to say it's almost 12 years now that I've been doing this, and it's always fun. So we've been in business, as I said, for almost 12 years this fall. The mission continues to be producing products that we currently get from petroleum using non-edible plant material, non-food plant material as the source of those materials. So technically, it's called lignocellulosic biomass.
Okay.
And maybe we'll get into what that means as we answer phone calls. And we're currently focused on making hydrocarbon-type fuels and chemicals that we currently get from petroleum out of that non-edible food biomass. So not ethanol, not starch, but hydrocarbon fuels and products.
And all four of the centers are involved in that way?
All four of the centers have a common mission. We try to get there in a slightly different way using the talents of the people we have and the model systems that we've decided to focus on. And we actually do a lot of collaboration and cooperation as well on everything from science through technology transfer.
Yeah, I can remember times when you might have been on or somebody else from GLBRC, and then along with that, somebody from Michigan State University,
yep,
for example, also appeared on the same show to talk about joint projects that,
yep,
were going on.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's cool. And their major milestone here, Josh, 500th patent application. Well, maybe first, Tim, how big a deal is that?
I think it's a big deal. I wish I had time to do some things over. And if I did, one of the things I would have forced myself and some of my colleagues to do would have been to sketch on a little piece of paper what we thought we would get done after 5 years and 10 years and put it in a little time capsule and open it up. When you look at the numbers, you know, over 3,000 papers, 500 patent applications now out of the four centers, that's four a month,
yeah,
over 12 years. So it's just amazing to see what we've gotten done.
Well, Josh, let's go to you now. You're with the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation. What role does your organization play in working with the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center and then getting patents off the ground?
Yeah, we work with the GLBRC to turn the discoveries they make and the inventions they work on into patents that we license out to companies that are interested in using those patents for commercial products. So, you know, Tim Throughout the course of his research, if he invents something or discovers something that he thinks could be patented, he'll come to us and tell us about it, and we'll decide whether we want to file for a patent on those inventions.
And maybe just talk even broader for a minute about Worf.
Yeah.
And 'cause you work with everybody, all units of the University of Wisconsin.
We do, yeah. We don't only work with the GLBRC. Worf was founded in 1925, so we've been around for 90-plus years. We're a nonprofit supporting organization for the university, which means that all of the income we bring in is devoted entirely to UW-Madison. We work with all departments across campus, helping them patent their inventions and then trying to get those inventions licensed to companies that want to use them.
And not every discovery can be turned into a patent.
That's true. Yeah. Yep.
How do you figure out what makes the cut?
Yeah, we have a process. We have a committee that meets once a month to go over all of the inventions that have been disclosed to us that month. We get about 350 to 400 inventions disclosed to us every year.
Oh, boy.
We have the way we're set up is we have folks that are working on the patenting side. They primarily interface with the patent office, and then folks like myself that work on the licensing side that primarily interface with companies and people that might want to use those patents. And we work together on each invention disclosure. We'll meet with the researchers. We'll go over their research, figure out what their invention is, and then we'll each go back and do our own homework. I'll look at the market. I'll look at what companies might be wanting to use those inventions. We'll think about whether there might be a startup that could come out of it. Exactly, you know, how long it might take that invention to get to market, where it fits in the commercial landscape. And then my colleagues on the patenting side will delve deep into sort of the legal aspects of it, seeing if we could get a patent, how long it might take to get it through the patent office. And then we meet once a month as a committee, go over all the inventions that have been disclosed and decide which ones to accept, because it is an expensive process to get a patent, so we can't accept everything.
Yeah, and I imagine it takes a long time, years?
It can take years. Sometimes it varies depending on the technology. You know, some patents can get accepted by the patent office and turned into an issued patent in probably a year would be very quick. 2 or 3, 4 years is not uncommon. But throughout that whole time, on the area that I work on the licensing side, we can be trying to find companies and working with potential users of the technologies while it's still being prosecuted in the patent office.
And Tim, how big a deal is this, this collaboration between the two?
Oh, it's huge. It's huge for the campus overall. In terms of the experience that Worf brings to the table, the credibility they have in the field, the fact that they've been doing it for so long and doing it so well, and to get real financial about it. I don't know how much it costs Worf to put together a patent and think about getting something licensed, but if you go on the web and Google, you'll find estimates of $25,000-$30,000 per event, right? So
yeah.
Tim goes in, files a disclosure. Josh's secret committee decides they're going to take it on. And that's a financial commitment on Worf's part because Tim doesn't pay for it.
Right.
Taxpayers don't pay for it on the grant. You multiply that by we have in GLBRC ourselves. Well, you multiply that by 500, and almost half of those are ours, so 250. That's several million dollars,
yeah,
right there of collaboration that comes for free for us. Yeah,
but in the end, there's money profit made from those patents.
Correct. Yeah, those are royalties. So one of the things that we do when we license a patent is we charge those licensees royalties. So every time they turn a patent into a product and sell that product out in the marketplace, a small percentage of that sale price comes back to Worf. And every year we donate a good portion of that back to the university in the form of an annual grant. And then also, as Tim said, we cover all the costs of our process, so that doesn't get charged to the university at all. All of the costs of running the office, filing patents, all those things.
So that's all tax, no taxpayers.
Correct, yeah.
Involved in that. And we're not talking about $1 or $2 million a year here that are going back in terms of support.
No, it's far more than that. I think our base grant last year, I believe, was somewhere between $50 and $60 million, and we estimate that if you include all of the other type of support that we give the university, it's well over $100 million a year that the university in value the university gets from Wharf every year.
It's an amazing amount of money, isn't it?
It's a machine. It really is a great partnership.
Well, talk about a little bit about some examples. Could you give us an example of some patents that are in the works for you?
Sure. I'll give you a couple things that I might have put in my time capsule when we got started, and a couple of examples of things I never would have imagined we would have found. So one of the things we're very excited about is work that came out of Professor Jim Domesic's lab in the Chemical and Biological Engineering Department on a new way to basically dissolve this plant material and separate each of the major components that we want to make fuels and products out of. It's a compound called gamma valerolactone. And Jim was originally trying to make this compound from biomass because it's a high-value chemical. But what he and his students and postdocs found is that you can actually use this to dissolve the biomass. So you can make it from the plants, and you can use it to dissolve the plants. So it's a recyclable system. Another thing that we did is we've put easier to cleave linkages in one of the major polymers, this compound called lignin. John Ralph's lab figured out a way to put easily cleavable linkages in the backbone. He calls them zippers, so that it comes apart easier. And that's a very exciting thing because it allows us to process the plant biomass much easier when we want to make fuels and chemicals. An unexpected outcome of that is we've been working with people in the paper and pulping industry, and that change that we made for one reason may actually make it cheaper and easier for people to process wood out of the forestry industry into paper and other products. So that's an example of a unexpected thing that came out of it. Another one that we just had a write-up in the news paper 2 or 3 weeks ago was people realizing that you could take one of the major compounds we get out of plant biomass, an aromatic compound called para-hydroxybenzoic acid, and use that to make Tylenol, to make the active ingredient in Tylenol, which is currently made from coal.
Oh.
So you can now think about a process where you could actually take green pills instead of coal-derived Tylenol pills. So that's something we never would have thought about doing in our wildest dreams.
Yeah, I would guess. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Tim Donahue directs the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center. Josh Carson is a licensing associate, I guess I should say, with the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundations. Questions for them about the link between industry, ag, and university research? Do you work in a bioenergy field, for perhaps? If so, what developments have you seen? What challenges do you see? Maybe you have questions about Wharf itself. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jane Rotunda, our producer today. Nigel O'Shea, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at what's going on with the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, as I mentioned earlier, the centers are celebrating their 500th patent since they started in operation. And it's great to have Tim Donahue, who directs the GLBRC, and Josh Carson with the Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation to talk about the research a little bit, talk about the patents themselves and that whole process. And certainly, again, you can join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Does one drive the need for another when it comes to patents like or research?
Well, so we have funded by the U.S. Department of Energy Office of Science, which is very fundamental basic science research. We call it high risk, high payoff, right? We are not told we have to have so many patents per year. We are told, you know, we come up with ideas, and sometimes they're good ideas and sometimes they're not good ideas. But when you get something that's an exciting result and you think it might be industrially useful, WOF makes it really easy because you can just go online and fill out a form on the web and say, here's what we've discovered, here's what I think it why it might be useful, and we click a patent agent at WOF, and we tend to know who we're going to work with because they've dedicated people to us, and it goes in, and then that kickstarts the whole process. I will say that, you know, we have in Great Lakes Bioenergy, we've published almost 1,300 papers now, and we have about 200 of those patent applications. So it's not like every manuscript creates a patent, right?
Right.
And it's not like everything we're doing is supposed to create a patent. There's a lot of things that we're doing that are of critical importance to where this field might go in terms of where we would grow crops, what kind of crops they would be, what the water and fertilizer and ecosystem benefits are of those crops, that are going to be critical for farmers to know and use. But we're never going to get patents on that, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's not everything that has to be generating a patent.
And you mentioned pulp as when you were talking about biomass. I thought, I wonder how many people are wondering what kinds of biomass
right.
you're dealing with. Pulp is one,
right? So we're focused now on what we call dedicated energy crops, things that you would grow solely to turn into energy and chemicals.
Okay,
we are not. So that includes woody biomass like poplar or you know, trees from the northern yeah. part of the state. That includes something you might have heard of if you read the newspapers or the lay press, switchgrass.
Mm-hmm.
It includes harvesting native prairie in a responsible way to turn that tonnage of biomass into products. So we are not working on improving corn, for example, for use as an energy crop. There is an agribusiness community out there that is dedicating a lot of money in crop improvement. We are not working on food-grade crops, and we're not looking at growing these energy crops on land that's currently used to produce food for animals and humans. We're looking at being able to grow these crops on non-agricultural land.
And I'm going to go to you, Josh, for a minute, because I was thinking about this. You know, you're a licensing guy. Mm-hmm. There's patent people. So you need a business acumen to some extent, but I would guess you also need to have a pretty good science, a decent science background.
Yeah, that's correct. Most of our staff members, both on the IP and the licensing side, have a pretty extensive science background. I personally went to graduate school here on campus in the biochemistry department. I've got colleagues that came out of the same department that Tim's a professor in bacteriology. We've got colleagues that came out of the medical school. So yeah, we do have extensive science backgrounds.
What are some favorite patents on your side?
I love working with Tim. He's come up with some really interesting things. I work with folks in the chemistry department who are working on new ways to desalinate seawater. We've been working with folks that are coming up with gene therapies in the biochemistry department and the medical school. So we really do see the breadth of everything that happens across campus.
Yeah, that's that desalinating water.
It's fun. Yeah,
it's got to be fun to work with smart people like that who are really doing some cool things that have.
Yeah, it really is.
Monumental could have some monumental results.
I think it's a real privilege to be able to meet with all of the professors across campus and learn about their research, and then think about how that research could get applied to commercial products.
Yeah. Tim Donahue and Josh Carson, our guests today. I'm surprised we haven't gotten a call here. Let's give us a call with your own questions or comments as we move along today and talking with them about the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Institute. I guess the Wisconsin Energy Institute should get in there too, because you're the interim director of that.
That's okay.
Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. So maybe the how does the Energy Institute figure in? Is it similarly set up, or what is?
Well, so Great Lakes Bioenergy is a, if you look at university parlance, it's a grant, and it's administratively housed in the Wisconsin Energy Institute. So the Wisconsin Energy Institute is the academic unit that oversees submitting the grant, keeping our books, hiring people. There's physical space in there as well. So the Energy Institute is there to house large, complicated cross-campus initiatives that require different types of services than the individual faculty grant requires.
Let's take some calls. I had a funny screen up, and I now can see that we have calls here. So let's go to the phones in Georgia and Madison. We'll go to you. Thank you for calling. Georgia, are you there? Are you seeing, let's see, oh, let's try Rick in Milwaukee then.
Hi.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
You bet. I was wondering, and I'm sorry I started listening a little late, but I was wondering if you guys had talked a little bit about a patent that university did a number of years ago that has affected millions and millions of lives, and that is warfarin. Or Coumadin, and it was a blood thinner. And I can't tell you I know this story 100%. I'm wondering if your guests know, but I thought it was researched after some bleeding disorders were discovered in some cows, and they looked at it and isolated it and created a blood thinner called warfarin. And Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation, and I don't know what the other part is.
Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, that story, I think many of us have heard that story. I think it may be apocryphal, but that's the history there. That was created, I think, back in the 50s, and it was a farmer brought a cow that had been bleeding to a professor here on campus, and they figured out the molecule in the spoiled hay that the cow was eating, and they discovered that was a blood thinner. And we helped patent that, and it's still used today in millions of people.
Very cool.
It is off patent now, though. That was so patents only last for about 20 years. So
is that what it is?
Yep, that's correct. The life of patents 20 years.
Yeah, Rick, does that help?
Bet it does. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Mike in Russ County. Your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I was wondering what if anything you guys are working on or have in your portfolio related to cogeneration. Or what you're looking into, if anybody's looking into cogeneration. So in other words, you know, we have a lot of industrial processes such as these large Google data centers and coal-fired plants and natural gas plants that require huge cooling stations and use lots of water in order to cool their processes down. That seems to be an awful lot of wasted joules that could be utilized for, you know, distilling ethanol or heating up other processes that require heat as an input. What's going on?
All right.
So the whole issue of how we have more sustainable industrial situations is a huge one. If you think about if you go to U.S. government statistics, about 70% of the energy that we use goes into what they call stationary activities, facilities, heating, air conditioning, cooling, things like that. There's a lot of work on campus going on about all the issues that you're talking about, namely what is a smarter way to have energy efficient manufacturing processes, be able to reutilize heat from one part of a process and use it to drive other parts of the system that we need. There's all sorts of activities there. Maybe Josh, you know of some individual patents in that space?
I can't think of any individual patents off the top of my head, but we do have researchers that have some patented inventions actually in the computer sciences department working on using some of that residual right. heat or cooling to cool processors.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for that call. Philip in Ashland, we'll go to you next.
Hi. I just I have a couple questions. One was using microbial action with electric stimulus to nurture production of hydrogen. And the second question is storage of that in that solid state matrix metal work. Are you doing any of that stuff?
We are not currently doing any work on hydrogen production or capture in Great Lakes Bioenergy. It's outside of our funding mandate from the feds. We did early on have a hydrogen program using microbes to eat the residue that you would get from processing biomass. And in particular, microbes that when they are overfed will produce hydrogen. And we actually have patents with WARF where we could take those microbes and put them inside a microbial fuel cell and that would oxidize the hydrogen on site as it was being made and turning it into electricity. A lot of that work has moved out of the basic science realm and is being supported by other programs on campus and elsewhere in the U.S. now.
Uh-huh. Philip, thank you. Scott in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hello. Yes, I was wondering, a couple years back on public radio, the station here, I heard some young gentlemen talking about replacing lithium ion with a more common substance, and they figured it would be developed within a couple of years. Well, that was a couple of years ago, and I'm wondering if you've heard anything.
Go ahead,
Josh.
Yeah, I'm
not aware of that. Although we do have a lot of work on campus on battery, next generation battery systems, including work in the building that will help us, I think, be in a very different place. You're in Wausau, you're not in Dane County or in Madison, but or in New York City, but about 10 days ago, we lost two transformers in Madison, and the grid went down, right? Mm-hmm. And the same thing happened in Manhattan 3 or 4 days later. We have people in on campus who are developing systems to have the grid be more stable and more resilient so that if one piece goes down, another piece kicks in right away. There's ways to do that with the grid. There's also ways to do that with microgrids where you store energy that you might have captured from the sun during the day, leave it in batteries, and then when you need it on demand, you can move it to where you want to move it. Again, this Manhattan example, well, I think it was even true in Madison. When the grid goes down and you're in a hospital, you're in an ICU, you're in big trouble unless you have a resilient backup system to run those hospitals. So there's a lot of uses for that. Small towns want to be self-sufficient. Army bases, whether they're in San Diego or in the Middle East, want to be self-sufficient. Cities and towns want to be self-sufficient. I grew up in New York City. I know people who were, you know, without power for several days a week after Hurricane Sandy hit. But yet there was an apartment building in Manhattan that had its own microgrid, and the lights never went out, and the AC never went down, and they had a lot of people, a lot of neighbors staying with them for a long time.
Scott, thank you so much. Erica in Oconomowoc, on to you now. Hi, Erica.
Yeah, hi. Question for you and a comment, I guess. What I noticed what I noticed, there's a trend towards not using warfarin or Coumadin, which came out of the research foundation years ago, that was cheap. It was. It had an anecdote. You had to do lab work. You had to watch your food a little bit, but it worked. Now we have medications. There's a trend towards using Eliquis meds like that that are very expensive, up to $500 a month. And I'm just wondering, any thoughts about that in terms of development of drugs in that area? And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks, Erica.
Similar to the earlier question, warfarin, you know, being one of the most famous things that we'd been involved in. I think there are a lot of researchers working on new therapies on campus, many that we partner with, and we'd like to see
and
what
that'll
they
keep
do.
Going. Yeah, absolutely.
So the other point. From the Great Lakes Bioenergy perspective, I already talked about one possible medical utility of a product, and that is plant-based Tylenol. But several years ago, there's another patent that is in Wharf's hands that I think they're trying to license that came out of us identifying a compound that inhibited yeast fermentations. It's a compound called poasic acid. It comes from part of the lignin. And we figured out why it was inhibiting yeast fermentations. And it was actually hitting a step that is a prime target for an antifungal drug. And so out of us trying to optimize microbes to make fuel, we've identified a compound that I've seen data where it actually works to protect crops from fungal diseases. And I think it's also being evaluated for its use in animals and humans now as an antifungal.
Really cool.
Yeah, Tim brings up a really good point that all of the research that happens in the GLBRC is directed towards all the things that he talked about, but there's all these sort of secondary ancillary effects of inventions that come out that can really have a big benefit for society.
And thanks again for that call. Georgia in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Georgia.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm wondering, with the research that's being done with biomass, how the production of greenhouse gases is factored into whether or not, you know, you make a decision to proceed with production or patenting, or is that part of the equation?
That's a great question, George. It's a big part of the equation on several ends. The choice of crops that we're evaluating is based in large part by how productive they will be, how many tons you'll get per acre. Every pound of biomass comes from plants harvesting sunlight and using that to fix CO2 from the atmosphere. So there's a big factor going into plant productivity. There's also a big part of our analysis that's driving towards the use of so-called perennial crops. These are things like crops that come back every year without having the seed. I get them in my backyard every year, and I call them weeds, right? It turns out perennial crops, if you harvest a ton of biomass off of a certain amount of land above the ground, there's almost as much biomass below the ground that goes into the roots, that's sequestered carbon that's built in under the ground. So we're looking at perennials for a variety of reasons. One is their greenhouse gas capturing ability. There are people in the center and elsewhere on campus and around the U.S. trying to develop plants that will store even more carbon underground in their roots as a way of sequestering more greenhouse gases.
Yeah,
we're also looking at crops that will not need fertilizer. And fertilizer use is one of the largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions. When the excess fertilizer that a farmer puts on the land gets metabolized by microbes in the soil, it makes greenhouse gases that are even worse in terms of their residence time in the atmosphere than CO2.
Oh, really interesting. Georgia, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And here we are, out of time. Tim and Josh, thanks so much for taking time to be with us today, and I imagine you'll come back and be with us again.
You know me, Larry. I don't know how to say no. It's always great to be here. I'll be back whenever I can.
Josh?
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, well, yeah. We'll get you back, too. Thank you both so much for being with us today. Well, fun talking about what was going on at the Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center, and congratulations to the center and the four centers for 500 patents so far. It's just absolutely amazing. Well, we had lots of tornadoes hitting us recently, and we'll find out some more about the tornadoes and the heat wave in Europe next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.